Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Creating Change. This is Doug Foresta. I could not be more excited to have with me today. My guest is Dorit Sasson, and we're going to talk about giving voice to your courage. And for those of you that are fans of the show, you know that voice and courage are definitely two of my favorite topics. And I'll say a little bit about Dorit and bring her right on. She has an amazing story. I think you'll really enjoy. I think you'll really enjoy hearing it. So Dorit is the founder of Giving Voice to Your Story website and Giving Voice to Your Courage weekly podcast. Her mission is to support heart-centered business owners and heart-centered authors as they find their brand voices, share their unique stories, gain more visibility, establish themselves as experts, and create authentic marketing messages, all through the use of smart content strategy and engaging copywriting. She inspires others to take risks and work from courageous heart at various speaking events across the country. She also has a memoir called Accidental Soldier, a memoir of service and sacrifice in the Israeli Defense Forces. And it's a story of how she dropped out of college and volunteered for the Israeli Defense Forces in an effort to change her life, and how in stepping out of her comfort zone and into a war zone, discovered courage and faith that she didn't know she was capable of. She is a podcaster herself and has a podcast called Giving Voice to Your Courage. And you can visit her at doritsasson.com. That's D-O-R-I-T-S-A-S-S-O-N. Dorit Sasson, welcome to Creating Change.
Thanks, Doc, for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you. First of all, am I saying your name correctly? Is that right, Dorit Sasson?
You are. As long as you don't go Doritos, then we're good.
No.
Not Sasson, like for Vidal Sasson, then we're good.
Right, there you go. Okay, got it. I'd love to hear, first of all, I'm really curious about how you ended up with your story. How did you end up in the IDF? Did you, in Israel, were you in the United States? Where did you grow up?
Right, I grew up in New York City, Manhattan. I'm currently in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My story was really an accident in terms of how I got inducted in the IDF. I have an Israeli father, but that meant nothing at the time. I really wanted to escape my mother. The whole purpose of me going over to the IDF was to kind of reinvent myself as a soldier while getting away from my mother, who was kind of neurotic and overprotective and undernurturing. I was not a Zionist. I reinvented myself as a Zionist while I was there and kind of, you know, it became sort of my purpose. But the whole it was really an accident. I wasn't born into service like Israelis are born into from the day that they are born. And for me, the concept of service was not even an existent concept. So the whole thing was an accident in the sense that it wasn't a planned act. It wasn't a planned commitment. It wasn't something that I knew I was going to be doing after graduating from high school. And I knew this from, you know, kindergarten or whatever. I didn't have the sense of direction or the sense of commitment or service and obligation, national duty that Israelis have.
So one of the things I'm curious about is, how does one even volunteer for the IDF? How did you do that?
Yeah. Well, you can do it. You know, you can do it. It turns out that you can do it. I mean, I was considered a grandmother by Israel standards. I was already kind of borderline 19, 20. And so it's kind of like they have a surplus of girls in the army even today. And it's not like they need women, but I kind of impressed it on them that I need this. And so they just took me. So if you're a Jew under the law of return and your purpose is to immigrate back to Israel, that's one thing. If you're a Jew coming back under the law of return, and you want to also serve in the IDF, you have a certain period of time in which kind of you're a ripe army age, kind of. If you're like over 30, I think they start like turning people away because they just don't want old people. They don't want to have health issues, maybe. Right. I don't know. But if you're a young, ripe, industrious, strong, you know, high profile, good profile, 18, 19-year-old, there's no problem with it. You can just sign up right away.
I love that you joined the IDF to get away from your mother.
Such a classical reason. crazy woman, crazy New Yorker.
No, no. So you joined the Israeli Defense Forces, and then what? What did you do? What did you do in the military?
Okay, so, you know, at the time there were no combat units for women. This is 1989. You got to get a sense of the technological landscape, which was pretty much non-existent. So, you know, there was like one Channel One and there was like no combat units for women. So women were basically expected to serve coffee to their bosses and hold secretarial jobs. Boring. So I wasn't into that. I knew that I had already served on a kibbutz, and the agrarian model of the kibbutz structure really spoke to me at the time. I was volunteering on my aunt's kibbutz. And that just like opened up all these cultural doors. It gave me this emotional freedom that I couldn't get in New York City. Everything smelled different. The food was fresh. The landscape was so colorful. The people were just so much more alive. I mean, I knew I didn't have the Israeli blood, but I had this drive, this determination to kind of fit in. And I felt like I had a worldly circle there, because there were volunteers from all over the world, and it really just felt right. But that was just a volunteer experience. And then when it came time to actually consider what unit I wanted to actually serve in, that was a challenge. But it was actually an easy no-brainer decision. I actually made it easy for myself by saying, hey, I'd rather just, because I had such a great experience on the kibbutz, I want to extend this experience and serve in the Nahal unit. The Nahal unit is short for Nohar Halutzi Lochem, which is the pioneer fighting unit. And basically what it means is that you serve on a number of military bases. You get military training, you get basic training, you get the gun training and all that stuff. But you also work on settlements and kibbutzim, which is plural for kibbutz. And you do a whole bunch of domestic duties, and you work in the fields and do farm labor, and then you work in the children's house, and you work in the dining room and do domestic stuff. And that combination really was special and unique. And because the kibbutz was still a communal kibbutz, it was really even more special. And you got to really connect on a social level, but then you had the military, you had the best of both worlds. You had the military framework, the tough, and then you had the socialization, the kind of fun part of the army, which is like just, you know, being in civilian clothes and going to the disco and then having, you know, fun. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, a nice combination of both worlds.
And so how long did you serve for?
So this was close to 2 years and I would say 6 months combined with the kibbutz work. So there was a pre-period before we were inducted, we served on a number of kibbutzim. Then the whole service itself was close to 2 years, and then we did post-army service on a kibbutz. And it was the longest, it's known to be for women the longest, one of the longer periods of military service in the IDF if you don't sign up for time. And at the time, this was when women did not have combat units, and now there's a doors have opened for them left, right, and center. So they have a whole different, there's a whole different mindset around what women can do and can't do in the military. It's different now.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's true now in the U.S. too, right?
Right.
Starting to allow.
I think Israel was the forerunner, though. I think it happened in Israel.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. Israel was there first. So you serve in the Israeli army, and then how did you find your way? Did you eventually go back to the U.S.? What did you do after you got out of the country?
Yeah, it was a really hard decision, because you go through so much. Being in the military really changes you. It's like you're not the same person that you are when you first start. And I had to go through a lot of loopholes, even though I really came across as an Israeli, and I spoke Hebrew quite fluently, and I had this Hebrew name, and, you know, everything seemed to be pretty good. I really worked very hard to make Israel my home, because I had this intention of buying a one-way ticket and not returning back to my mother. So for me, the stakes were really high. and I wanted to make sure that I had an identity that was sustainable, meaning that I don't have to go back to my old life. And I felt like Israel spoke to me in a different way, and I felt like there was a future for me. With that said, I had challenges, and eventually I made the decision to visit my mother, but then I had this commitment to come back to Israel and to pursue my BA degree, which would be paid for by the Ministry of Absorption, which is in charge of all the immigrants and their rights. So I had rights that I could use. That was very helpful and saved me a lot of money and helped me not get into debt. And so I got my BA, and then from that point on, I had just went through so many obstacles and so many challenges that it was just like a no-brainer. I was like, well, I'm already here, you know, and I've, you know, already done this and this and this. I'm just going to stay here. And then after I got my BA in education, I was able to teach English as a second language. Well, it's really a foreign language over there. And I just became an English teacher, and I, you know, was trying to find the practical answer to employment. And Israel at the time was such a developing country that English was such a necessary thing for me to do. I mean, I basically could get a job anywhere. So it was like, hey, I'm employable. That's just cool. And I can always teach English even better. So I just went through the system, and I just kept going up through the system. Started with my BA, then moved up to my MA, then moved up through teaching to high school and stayed in high school for a while and taught a little bit of college. So I just kept going through the system, and I ended up staying in Israel until 2007, and then we returned back to the States, my husband and I, at the time.
And when you returned back to the States, I'm curious about how you got into writing, how you made the transition into writing or content. Is that something?
Right. It wasn't content that first attracted me. It was all about writing as a freelance writer. And in Israel, I didn't have that ability because I was always teaching, because it just didn't seem like a viable source of income. And I had this profession that I had worked so hard to be. When we made the decision to cross over to the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, there was a big part of me that wanted to reinvent myself as a writer. But I always knew I had this writing blood in me, but I just felt like I could do it now more than I could in Israel, because it was just always teaching, and I couldn't find another way to make ends meet other than teaching. And coming to the States, I had this more professional freedom waiting for me. So I started writing different kinds of writing. Just, at the time I didn't have a website and I wasn't blogging. I was just writing like articles for children and articles for adults and more teacher related articles. When I started marketing myself, when I started blogging and started to engage my readers with my story, then it became more apparent that I have to start marketing myself as an author and as a small business owner. But that was much, much later. The whole idea was first to feel confident and talk about my story. And so when I blogged it, I felt really excited about my story. My enthusiasm jumped. People were commenting on my posts. It suddenly felt real, and people were engaged, and they said, you have to write about this. This is really interesting. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the more I blogged about it, the more I felt inspired and engaged. So I started to really develop that as a platform, and eventually it became my personal story, and that I wrote the book, the memoir. That was, you know, it took me some time to get that to that destination. And then the content writing really evolved as I started to market myself as an author and entrepreneur, knowing that this is now the next step up.
Well, one of the things, you know, at the very beginning, I talked about how this episode is about giving voice to your courage. And I know you have a podcast called Giving Voice to Your Courage. What do you mean by giving voice to your courage?
Right. So courage can be many different things to many people, and it also is something that happens in the moment. In my case, when I went to Israel, I had to have courage to be an IDF soldier. For people who are marketing themselves, I think courage also means the ability to be authentic. And I know that's an overused word, and it sometimes can be very tedious to listen to it, but I think it's the ability to to be you and to allow yourself to be you. With so many people doing content marketing, for example, and trying to market themselves and not be salesy, they're often struggling with this idea, okay, so how do I get the word out there? How do I find the best way to share and promote my work? What do I need to say right now? How do I build a platform? How do I get my services promoted? All that stuff. And it's often the end result in mind and not the process or engaging the personality right. of the person. And so I think courage for, let's say what we're talking about earlier about, content marketing and all that stuff. I think people think they have to be very formulaic about it. They think more about the what and the how, and not just, just to be, the idea that it's okay to just, be yourself. And that's much more engaging than pondering and contemplating if you come across as credible enough, if you're qualified enough to do this kind of stuff, you have, real story that makes you credible. So that I think is the first thing. And the second thing is just the courage to also tell your story. And I think a lot of people are sharing a lot of this. And here's my unique part about it is that, again, you don't have to have a very, an NFL celebrity type story. And a lot of people that I speak to and people that I work with, they're very hesitant about building a platform. They end up posting like chapters of their book online. They're not quite sure how to go about it. They need a lot of guidance. And they're like, well, I need to set up an about page and I need to set up my web page and this and that. And I tell them, really be very deliberate in how you're sharing your story, because that's going to market you as a person who maybe they want to hire. So you want to highlight the right things. And so they're not sure about how to go about that. And that takes some courage too. So it's kind of twofold.
I completely agree with you about the importance of having the courage or giving voice to. Well, here's what's interesting. I usually talk about it as having the courage to share your voice or having the courage to share your story. I've never thought of it as giving voice to your courage. But what I hear you saying is it's like giving voice to who you really are. Would that be
right?
Fair?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I'm really curious. I mean, you talked about, that we need to have that, that we need to do this. What are some ways? So what are some ways? Because I know people really struggle with this.
Yeah.
If I'm somebody who's just getting started online, or maybe maybe I've started, but I'm not really anywhere yet. What would you suggest in terms of, what does that look like to actually share my story or to be myself online? What does that?
Right. There's so many ways to look at it. And when I started blogging, I didn't really have a purpose goal in mind. I just was blogging to find my blogging voice. And it ended up, a few years later being my brand voice. I think that, I don't want to impress it on people that it has to be only one way. But a lot of people think that they have to either do it via video or they have to, if they don't have the right, medium, then there's something wrong with them. And I often say, first of all, feel comfortable in the medium that you feel good in, that you can continually commit to consistently. Because what happens is they end up blogging and then they throw the blogging out the window, and then they do video and then they end up doing something else, and it becomes really disorienting for them too. And they get really, mind boggled by it, and it can be very frustrating. And then you end up giving everything out the window. So I really don't believe that everybody has to do blogging and video and all that stuff. So content marketing isn't just an end all for one type of person. There's different ways to do it. So that's one thing. And going in, and it's like whatever medium you feel comfortable in, eventually, you want to be strategic in how you share your story, right? So let's say a person is writing a book for the first time, and they're going to blog about it, and they decided that that's the best way to get the word out about their blog, and then eventually, build a funnel towards maybe getting some clients and all that stuff. The worst scenario is to just blog chapters and then have people read them, and then hopefully somebody will buy the book, and that doesn't happen. And I always tell people that if you're going to blog, let's say, about something that you're a specialist in. If it's a small business type thing that you're good at, like an, you're an editor and you're teaching, let's say, writers how to write better or something like that, just as an example, then you might want to blog, you know, certain tips or themes, maybe. If you're, let's say, writing a nonfiction book and there's lessons like, let's say, an Eat, Pray, Love type thing, not the same thing, I always say, well, blog lessons. What did you learn from this experience? And then what are some takeaways, for example, that you got from this experience? So those are like ways that you can maximize the story part without saying, you know, here's what I did today. I went to the Starbucks and I bought a coffee. Those are mundane and those are incidents and they're not really strategic. They're just kind of like things that
right.
are mundane and not noteworthy. And it's very Facebooky and Twittery and people get turned off by that really quickly. And the internet is full of that stuff. So, you know, I really think that that helps people stand out. The thing, the key is to really build this platform consistently and whatever works for you to stick to it and to find your voice that way and to feel comfortable and not, there's a lot of pressure and tension. Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I don't blog like this person, or I'm not going to, nobody's going to listen to me. And, you know, it just doesn't work like that anymore. People want to be engaged. So if the content is good, then the voice will carry it over.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And the you know, you're talking about the compare and despair type thing. Well, how could I possibly do this when I'm not as good as so-and-so? And, you know, it's funny. When I first started doing podcasting, I never had any real idea of what I wanted to do it for. I just knew that, I mean, I knew I wanted to get my voice out there, but I never, it took me a long time to figure out what I wanted to do with it. And I didn't think of it as, oh, so-and-so is podcasting, I'll do it. In fact, I don't think anyone I knew was podcasting. I just decided I was going to do it. And I just had a passion for it. And I think part of what I hear you saying is, you know, find a medium that you're really passionate about and go with it.
Right. Right. It's such an important thing that, you know, passion you can't fake. You know, you can't fake passion, and people somehow undermine it and push it under the carpet, and it really disturbs me. Because, you know, when people are in, when I see somebody fired up with passion, I want to tune in and learn more. I am so stoked every time I listen to that person. It's like, what else is he going to share or she going to share? You know, and yet for some reason, we tend to belittle that and we think it's not important. And for some cuckoo crazy reason, we underestimate that people may not tune in and we think that they're going to judge us. I think the judge and the fear gets in the way all the time and that knocks us over. And then we end up sabotaging whatever we want to do. And then it doesn't get the attention that it needs. And it's just really hard to work like that and build a brand and build a platform, because those are big end goals in mind. It really starts with that passion. You know, what are you really passionate about? What fires you up in the morning? And I'm always, you know, What am I fired up today? What will bring me joy? What gives me that strength to keep going? Because that's what's going to keep you going, not, you know, just the blogging part. Yeah. You know?
That's so, oh my gosh. We have 2 minutes and I could go on for, it's like my favorite topic in the world. But I want to make sure that, that people know how to find you and find out more about the book.
Sure.
So can you tell people how to find you and how to learn more about Accidental Soldier?
I'm doing a lot of events that can be found on my website around the book. I'm doing an Israel tour next month, which I'm really excited about. And all of that can be found at doritsasson.com. That's DORITSASSON as in Nancy.com. You can find out more about the book there and you can learn more about the events that I do. As I said, I'm doing an Israel tour, which is really the source of inspiration for the book, Accidental Soldier. So it's kind of like bringing the book to the home and coming full circle with that. I'm really excited. And then you can also learn about the podcasts that I do around courage and then the people that I've been interviewing, which have been primarily authors and entrepreneurs. And if you are one of those people who have a story of courage, I want to hear from you. You can check me out. And there's a contact button I'm not looking for somebody with a real, you know, larger than life story. It can be very simple and profound in that way. And I'd love to hear from you.
Dori Tessin, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Doug. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, everyone. Till next time, remember, keep creating. The world needs your gifts. This is Doug Podesta at Creating Change.